Now at this time, it's my pleasure to introduce a person who I believe is leading more than anyone else this call for Oregonians to examine and to create a healthier business climate for all of us, Governor Victor Attia.
Good morning. Very impressive, and I'm very pleased to turn out those of you who are interested to see what we can do about our business climate in Oregon. I believe our meeting today may be something of a milestone. Here we are, one room, one day, business people and state government people meeting on a common objective. It's not always been like that. Used to be some business people who dealt with the government claimed they felt a little like a woman who was told her canary needs a mate. The woman told the clerk at the bird store she did not know the gender of her bird, or how to find out. The clerk said all she needed to do was to present the canary with two worms, a male worm and a female worm. The canary ate the male worm, it was a male canary, and vice versa. The woman protested, how can I tell a male worm from a female worm? Madam, the clerk responded, this is a bird store. You'll have to get that information from a worm store. We in state government never gave business people that runaround, and I doubt we ever went to such extremes as that. We have changed. Paraphrase the slogan of a major automobile manufacturer. Have you dealt with state government lately? Likewise, we in state government recognize, as we have never before, what motivates business people. Increasingly, we are recognizing that for business, time is money. Increasingly, we're also recognizing time lost in government red tape or needless government regulation. Also results in lost sales, lost profits, and ultimately lost jobs. Increasingly, we in government are recognizing lost sales, lost profits, and lost jobs eventually lead to lost tax revenues to government. So as government people and as business people, today we are united in our aim at a common goal. That goal is jobs for Oregonians. It's a broad statement, but our approach is anything but that of a scattergun. Our approach to creating jobs for Oregonians and prosperity for Oregon is more tightly focused, more aggressively executed, and more successful in its results than at any time in our state's history. For a governor to make that statement in this election season may sound suspicious. But let me remind you, I'm not running for anything, nor can I run for governor again. And it's interesting to me, I received a card I read this morning, a friend of mine in Colorado watched me speak on television, suspicioning that I'm doing something national. I want to stay in Oregon and go fishing. But I do want to talk with you about a candidate. That candidate is our state of Oregon. As a candidate, Oregon today is seeking election in corporate boardrooms, boardrooms here in Oregon and boardrooms around the world, as a site for new plants and new payrolls. Dear Governor, I see myself as Oregon's campaign manager in winning those elections. I see each of you, business people and state government people alike, as my top aides. And I want you to know our candidate not only is strong, but our candidate is strong enough to meet and beat any and all comers. Our strength means not only that we can be winners, but that we also can, to a great extent, pick and choose whom we may want to vote for us. Oregon is one of a handful of states with a livability quotient that is the envy of the nation. 3 of the 25 most livable cities in America are right here in Oregon. I know we have some 3M folks with us, but earlier 3M executives told us they were asked to select, they asked their executives to select the major American city in which they would most like to live, and Portland won the most votes. When the National Conservation Foundation selected those states which were the best environmental stewards, Oregon ranked the top 5. I do not want to have to convince you Oregon is an attractive candidate, nor probably do I need to remind you we have increased Oregon's electability with measures such as reducing workers' compensation premiums from the absolute top in the nation. Ours is the only state whose workers' comp has gone down. Such as streamlining our land use appeals process so business can work within it. Such as establishing and managing an effective program of financing to help preserve existing payrolls and to help create new jobs. Such as the establishment of our Economic Action Council, a panel of state government managers, who meet with business executives to explain our laws and answer their questions. Such as initiating a sophisticated computerized system to help prospective businesses locate the most suitable site in which to locate. And such as our recent repeal of the unitary tax formula, a tax that was like an invisible shield keeping many investments out of Oregon. Actually, the list of what we have done to improve our state's business climate is a long one, much longer than I have the time or you the patience to complete this morning. The bottom line is this: Oregon is a strong candidate, the strongest of candidates, to compete for new jobs. And we are asking for a vote of confidence. Vote of confidence in the form of investments, new jobs, and secure payrolls. Employers who have as much respect and awe as we have for this land we call Oregon. Our campaign for Oregon has never been more hard-hitting nor more effective. Never in our history have we been such a leader both in promoting Oregon as the ideal business address or in positioning Oregon as a reliable world trader. Not only is our state economic development program the strongest it ever has been, but our regional programs around the state, let me say specifically because we're in Salem, SEDCOR here in Salem, are the most sophisticated, the most professional, and the most progressive we've ever seen. We're telling the story of our candidate. We're telling the Oregon story in trade shows, in trade missions, and in personal contacts worldwide. Only a few weeks ago, our State Department of Agriculture received a prestigious award from the President for excellence in export. Ours was the only State Department of Agriculture to receive such an award. This was the second time Oregon has received such an award in recognition of our aggressive program to help exporters sell Oregon-made products far beyond the borders of our state. In 9 days, I will leave Oregon on a 20-day trade mission to Japan and to the People's Republic of China. Japan already is our leading foreign trading partner. Japan is a nation with great interest in making new investments in this country. Japan is a country that has taken special notice of Oregon as a result of our personal contacts, as a result of our healthy climate for business investment, and of course as a result of unitary repeal. For Oregon, Japan already is an expansive frontier of trade with new horizons waiting to be discovered and won. I guarantee you this trip, combined with the opening of Oregon's new trade office in Tokyo, will make a lasting impression on the Japanese. Our business with China, by contrast, is smaller. But we know the potential of a country with the size, with the population, and with the industrial ambitions of China are virtually without limit. This time, in any campaign, people want to know what the polls say. And what do the polls say about Oregon as a candidate for business investment? The answer is the polls show Oregon's future as a candidate for business investment is filled with optimism and promise and, most important, with results. The polls show a candidate that has been elected only recently by companies such as NEC America, which is the U.S. subsidiary of a giant company based in Tokyo, by companies such as National Semiconductor Corporation, which has elected to locate a facility in Portland, by companies such as Eagle Picture Industries, a Fortune 500 company that has selected a site in Eastern Oregon, by companies such as Wacker Siltronic and Intel, both of which are making major capital investments and hiring hundreds of new employees at existing plants here in Oregon. The polls also show Oregon is working with 66 investment prospects. Prospects with a potential for thousands of new jobs for Oregonians. I don't think I need to remind you that not so very long ago, before we began waging this unprecedented campaign for Oregon, our state had few, if any, investment prospects. Now we not only have prospects, but we have the prospects who are voting to make their investment in our state. These are elections Oregon has shown that we can win. These are elections that show that Oregon will continue to win. But these also are elections Oregon will win only if each of us works to generate the investment climate that will generate corporate decisions for jobs for Oregonians. And together we can do that. To my friends and colleagues in state government, I say, what you do, whether you are an inspector or someone answering the telephone, what you do affects the climate for doing business in Oregon. If you're friendly, if you're genuinely helpful, if you go an extra mile, the result is a state government whose image is a very positive one. If you cause or even allow unnecessary delays, you jeopardize Oregon's image as a good place to do business. If we take too much of the time of business, then business will take too many of its investment dollars elsewhere. When I speak to you in state government, I speak to you individually, not collectively. Because any one of you can enhance or jeopardize Oregon's image. To my friends in the Oregon business community, I say, government is easy to kick around. Those of us in business, including myself at times, have done plenty of that. But to you I say, everything you do that weakens the image of state government also makes our state of Oregon a little weaker. Today, our state government is one we should be defending. It is a state government we should be defending because the state employees in this room and thousands of them around Oregon have made it better than it ever has been. It is a state government worth defending because even when we go awry and make mistakes or cause delays, we will admit and correct our errors when they're called to our attention. When you deal with state government in Oregon, you should never feel like the canary owner who was referred to the worm store. Finally, to our visitors from outside of Oregon, I cordially invite you to check us out. Find out as much as you can about Oregon. Ask us for the campaign literature of our candidate. And do not fail to ask us tough questions. Ask us your tough questions because we have good answers for you. candidate for investment in plants and payrolls and in prosperity for the future, Oregon is in an enviable and rare position. We have an attractive candidate. We have the resources, the enthusiasm, the leadership to promote our candidate as we never have before. And we are getting more votes of confidence in our candidate than at any time in our history. As a campaign manager, I'm asking each of you to get involved in this critical campaign. Part of that campaign is conducted in meetings, such as this one today, where we can look for soft spots, check our pulse, and seek means to shore up our weaknesses. I have no fear of responsible efforts to identify soft underbelly, if there is one, within my state. In fact, I welcome those efforts. As I'm meeting to talk with you today, I ask you to be as aggressive about defining Oregon's unidentified weaknesses as we are in promoting Oregon's undisputed strengths. Undisputed strengths in workers' compensation, land use planning, taxation, in a variety of areas. We have proved we can solve any problem once it's identified. In Oregon, we have proved the only problems we cannot solve are those problems we have never identified. And so we need to get to work. And I want to conclude this by hopefully, for the last time, breaking the vessel of an image that has plagued me all around the United States and as far away as Saudi Arabia. I want to now smash that. And I want to do it by saying to you, all of you, visitors and everyone else, come visit, but don't stay away too long. Thank you.
Clamor on at that time by Congress to have the government to create federal jobs to ease the burden of that dip, and Eisenhower said no. He would get incentives for businesses to, if they invest, they will have certain advantages during that period of time. It worked. And it worked because the interest rates were low. So I'm saying that the president's theory is correct. I just don't think it's going to be executed the way he thinks it might be, for those reasons. But let me close by saying I hope it works, but I can't see how it might.
Governor, I want to ask you another question about your economic development program. One legislator said that it was like hoping to get a bottle of champagne when we can afford a bottle of beer. And she mentioned that Washington State in this legislative session back in November, when they were going to get the funds allocated twice as much as you're asking for, do you think you'll get the results?
Well, let me ask you a question. Did she suggest another way in which to approach the economic...
No, she supports your program. She's just wondering if you can get the mileage out of it.
Well, did she recommend more money?
Yes.
Good. I would say to you that what we're proposing is better than nothing, which is what we've had for a long time. As a matter of fact, the Oregon legislature has not only given us nothing, they've cut the economic development budget. And all of a sudden now, legislators are interested in helping us, and I'm grateful to have them come aboard. I had a legislator visit me and jumping all over me and about our actions in economic development, and I jumped all over that legislator and said, it's your body. We went to you at the emergency board, asked for $100,000 more for economic development, and you turned us down. And so is it our fault that we weren't able to pursue that which we wanted to? And I'm saying to you, it was the legislature's fault, not the governor's fault. And I'm willing to take, and as a matter of fact, we will spend our $2.3 million if they give it to us, better than the $4 million that was given for tourism in the state of Washington. And that's just because I think we've got some very good managers in state government, and we'll do the job that needs to be done. Don't confuse the size of the dollar with performance. I haven't, as a governor. I've said that the dollar and the service don't necessarily match. If you give more dollars, you're going to get more service. I don't believe that. I believe that you can do a good job with the money that I requested. If I thought we should could use more, I would have asked for more.
Governor, on the case like Leroy, be some sort of oversight commission or board to review when something like this happens?
Let me tell you about the particular case, because the IRP case and the person that was contacted actually violated the standards of the department. And let me tell you exactly. They made a call to the state government. Now, I don't know who it was, whether it was a parole officer, someone supervising, nonetheless, IRP. And the question was, he says here that he was a maintenance worker for the state of Oregon. Is that true? A direct answer didn't come. As a matter of fact, they didn't get the right answer. Actually, according to policy in human resource, this is a policy, it's already written policy, that if they call and say, let's take IRP's case again, this man is a maintenance man for 14 years in the state of Oregon, is that true? And the answer would have been, or should have been, by policy, no. He was in prison. He'd been in prison for 14 years. He went in for whatever it was, and he got out at such and such a time, and that information should have been given. So, is the system wrong or the person that was in it? Well, in this case, I think it was the person that was in it. We have asked, however, because we noticed the shortfall, the parole board, by statute, was not allowed to have the psychologist and psychiatrist records in the parole board records. They were barred by statute. We saw it last session and didn't get the change in that policy, so the psychologist and psychiatrist records. Where I'm really coming down is this. There is no fail-safe program. It's impossible to have one. However, to presume that nothing is being done, there is no concern, and there's no intention of improving the system in regard to parole is not correct. We've been working on it, been concerned about it for a long time. I went through a long period of time just on the index. It's not right. Matrix system that we have. And there was a change in the matrix system. And so it's an ongoing. I saw in the paper where I was not going to accede to an investigation. Well, it's a strange set of terms. Ours is an ongoing investigation, if you will, and has been since I've been governor. But there is no fail-safe program. The only fail-safe program there is let nobody out on parole. That's the only one. Then you're not taking any chances. They'll get out, you know, when their term's over, but get rid of parole altogether. I know we couldn't physically do that. That compounds into a whole lot of things in which some people who should go to jail won't go to jail. So there's no good answers in it. However, if there are good suggestions for changing, we're always interested in looking at it. Anybody's got ideas and where they think there's some shorts, but I'm saying to you that there was a policy in place. It wasn't used. The parole board could not get psychiatrists and psychological records, and IRP got out during that period of time. We saw that weakness, and now they can. That's about all I can say about it.
Governor, what are the requirements for members of the parole board? Are the requirements such that we can forestall any such slip-ups in the future?
No. There's no way in the world that you can, as I say, have a fail-safe program. There really isn't. There's been a recommendation that I fire all the parole board members. That would then mean we have to appoint five new ones. And what kind of qualifications would you select for such a thing? You know, what would you write? Nobody can get out? Well, of course you wouldn't do that. I think we have a mix in there now, and this is by my own personal attitude, of more people who are, let's say, at least more conservative than prior parole boards have been. That's my view of it. I've selected people that I'm aware of, and I know some of those that I've selected as new as being pretty well-balanced people. Hazel Hayes, the chairman, I've known for a long period of time. She's a strictly a no-nonsense person, strictly. But presume I were to fire all of them and get five more. I mean, I couldn't tell you or any one of you that there wasn't going to be some inmate that's going to slip up. No, there's only one sure way, and that is have no one go out on parole. Then you're absolutely sure nothing will happen.
you aware of the organization that was recently formed called PROPAC, for what it's called progressive candidates? It includes Ted Kulongoski and John Kitzhaber and such and so forth. They're advocating going statewide to try to get what they call progressive candidates into state offices, legislative offices. Are you aware of that? Do you have any opinion on that?
No. This is a free country. You can do anything you want. It still comes down to what the word progressive means, however. If progressive means wasting money, then I think that's probably the correct definition.
Governor, I understand you're making a trip back east at the end of the week.
I may not. right now, we still have our ticket for Friday, and we'll go to the National Governors Association annual meeting, which is, and I think it's a pretty important meeting. I'd like to be there, but first priorities come first, and if the legislature's still here, I'll have to cancel it, which I certainly don't want to do.
I want to ask you quickly about the ONC contracts, which apparently the Bureau of Land Management won't extend on its own authority. Do you have any plans to press the congressional delegation to act in that regard?
I don't think we have to press them at all. They're if there's a subject they're well informed on, it's that one. And as far as I know, they're all very supportive of no changes as it is at the present time.
Governor, when you talk to the President about a national housing policy, what is that? What does it do?
It's important for the President to say that housing is a national administrative goal. And what it does is more subtle than real, but actually the subtlety creates the reality. When the President of the United States says, I want to accomplish this, and I'm sure many of you are aware of the bureaucracy and wanting to please the President, then all of a sudden their attitude changes like I've been trying to change the attitude in the state of Oregon. And I would say to them, tell me how we can, don't tell me how we can't. And if the President says, my administration policy for home ownership, that's what mine is, that's one of my goals, then there's a subtle change. All of a sudden they'll try to find out how you can do it or look for ways of doing it which you're not now thinking about, instead of how we can't do it or not thinking about it at all. So it really is much more important than it would appear to be. And I was pleased, I suppose I was overly sensitive, in which the President in his State of the Union talked about the unemployed loggers, number one, and then later on in his State of the Union talked about home ownership, although he didn't declare all of what I wanted him to declare. I'll take what I can get. I'm still pressing for a major address on that subject at some point in time, and we'll continue to work on that. But it will have real substance. It's important. It is not just cosmetic.
Thank you, everyone, for your excellent questions. We do have to have the governor at his next stop. And governor, I'd like
to enjoy all of this. Thank you very much.
People, Laurie Jewett from our local television station.